This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Beginning as early as June 11th, a week from Friday, Illinois is expected to transition into phase 5 of its COVID plan that would remove capacity limits on businesses and seems to be as close to a new normal as we're going to get, at least in the near future. But as we begin this transition, children aged 11 and younger have not yet been approved for any of the COVID-19 vaccines. And that's left parents scrambling to figure out how to keep their children safe in a country that's acting as though the pandemic is over. And to be clear, the pandemic is not over. Last week, on the 21st, we spoke about this with Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, who has two young children herself. She had just sent a letter to the CDC urging them to give more specific guidance to parents in her situation.
It appears to me as if we were trying to get some good news out, or we were trying to be proactive, and people are tired and all of this, but they completely forgot about those of us whose kids can't be vaccinated yet. And how that is still difficult for us at home, but also for our employers. I mean, as an employer, I have an office here where I have a lot of staff with young children. And, you know, some of my staff were like, well, we want to go back to work. And I said, nobody is going to come around me who's not wearing a mask. And they're like, well, you can't require that as an employer if the CDC and science says you don't need it. And I said, well, no, science hasn't said that. Science just said that, you know, I'm not going to get sick in a way that's debilitating because I've been vaccinated, but I don't want to bring this home to my kids. And by the way, so I've told my staff, listen, you have to make your own decisions for your children. But, you know, any of my staff members who have young kids who can't be vaccinated, I'm still going to continue their telecommuting, making those accommodations because God forbid any one of our children gets sick because one of us brought something home.
Joining us today to talk about protecting children from COVID-19 as Illinois businesses fully reopen is Dr. Subhash Chaudhary. He's chief of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine in Springfield. Dr. Chaudhary, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you so much.
Also joining us today is Gloria E. Barrera. She's the president of the Illinois Association of School Nurses. Gloria, thank you for coming back on the show.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we also want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. Parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, if there are any children listening, camp counselors, we want to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number. What are your concerns for the health and safety of your child or children as Illinois more fully reopens? 800-222-9455. Do you plan to get the vaccine for your children as soon as it's available, or are you hesitating? 800-222-9455. Any questions you have about kids and COVID-19, join the conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. Dr. Chaudhary, I want to begin with you. The CDC recently updated its mask guidelines, allowing non-vaccinated people to go maskless outdoors. Vaccinated people can go maskless indoors. Right now, though, children who are 11 and younger have not been approved to take the vaccines. What is the risk level for children in that age range?
I'm nervous about this because even though children, many of them don't get symptoms, and those who get, they get mild disease. But we still see children who have symptoms and they are admitted, and then they get the late complication, what we call multi-inflammatory syndrome of childhood. We have patients with that right now too. So it makes me very nervous when we have not achieved very high immunization rate in the community, and most of the children have not gotten to do this.
What sort of precautions then should parents be taking for their children as they are going out in the world? And let's say in this case, fully vaccinated parents, this is the situation I'm in personally. We have, my wife and I are both fully vaccinated. We have two children who are in the age range where they are not eligible for the shot. should we be behaving in our lives as though we're still, you know, not going into restaurants, not doing that sort of thing? Or how do we navigate that?
I would still take the precaution because I feel nervous about it. Like, even though I'm vaccinated, I've taken 2 doses and I assume I responded good, but I don't know around me who is vaccinated and who's not vaccinated. So anytime I'm in an indoor activity, I feel nervous without mask.
And as we come into, it's June, summer vacation, a lot of children are going on vacation. A lot of them have already started. Even if they're not leaving town, just sort of not being in school, there are invitation for parties and play dates. After many children have spent the school year from home on their computers, a lot of them are probably eager to reconnect with their friends. How safe is it, though, for children to be spending time with other unvaccinated children, be it at home or in a park, or are there differences? Is outdoor safer? Dr. Chaudhary, do you have a perspective on that?
Again, if they are outdoor activities and they're not having any symptom, like, because many times COVID could present just with low-grade fever, some running nose, and mild cough. So if there are no symptoms and there are outdoor activities, that may be okay. But indoor, I would be nervous.
And does that risk level change depending on whether the home the child is visiting has adults or teens that have been fully vaccinated or not? I mean, I gather better to go somewhere where they're fully vaccinated, but it sounds like you're going to say that you're probably just nervous about this in general, regardless of the situation that kids might be going into.
Again, like, if they've been, both parents on both sides are vaccinated and children are going and they have no symptoms at all, then it may be worth taking that risk. But if we don't know that host parents are vaccinated or not, I would not take that chance.
All right. So I was talking about the school year there, and I want to bring Gloria Barrera into the conversation. Can you talk about what you and other school nurses, what was your experience like this past year?
Sure. That's a really good question. I think school nurses have always answered the call to serve during times of crisis. We are each demonstrating just how essential the role of a school nurse is to the health, safety, and well-being of students, staff, and the communities across the state of Illinois. We were at the front lines before stay-at-home orders went into effect. And that was, of course, last year. So we have consistently supported the reopening of schools here in Illinois, but when it is safe for students, staff, families, and the community. We will continue to follow the Illinois State Board of Education and IDPH guidance, as well as any executive orders issued by the governor. School nurses have worked closely with local health departments on exclusion guidelines. And at this time, I do anticipate that some students and staff will be masked and others will not. In my district, for example, we are already documenting COVID vaccines for our students. As I mentioned, though, we do need that guidance, though, from the state and local level. And I know it will be forthcoming for this fall. Because as you noted, Brian, we are entering phase 5 here in Illinois, but the pandemic is not over.
What concerns are you hearing from other school nurses or parents, maybe, about phase 5 as Illinois moves into that?
Yeah, I think that there's, just as Dr. Chaudhary kind of mentioned, there is this sense of just overall anxiety, some kind of nervousness, I think, as healthcare providers, as school nurses. But with parents, there are a lot of questions. I work at a high school, so those students, of course, all of them can be vaccinated, but there are contraindications of maybe why they're not being vaccinated. But when we're looking at elementary schools for those, the age group that you noted, the 11 and younger that cannot get the vaccine yet, those school nurses are just wondering, how are we going to have school this fall? Is it going to be another option for remote if parents choose? And just what does that look like for each district?
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about children and COVID-19 and vaccines. I'm talking with, we were just hearing there, Gloria Barrera, president of the Illinois Association of School Nurses. We're also joined by Dr. Subhash Chaudhary, who is the chief of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine in Springfield. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you considering having your children vaccinated? Maybe your children have already gotten vaccinated if they're on the older adolescent side of things. Why or why not? What questions do you have about kids and COVID-19 and the vaccines? Join the conversation by giving us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. Dr. Chaudhary, I want to ask, one of the common activities families do in the summer is going to a swimming pool, a public pool, or a beach. Do you have a perspective on that? Is being in the water, maybe it has to do with the crowd that's there or a beach. Is that something parents should consider or reconsider for summer plans this year?
Again, chlorine kills many of the germs. So one would hope that will help. But again, depends how crowded the pool or the beach is. That's what is going to make the difference.
It sounds like physical distancing is still something that people should keep in mind and use that to make their evaluation.
Yes, and again, we don't know at the pool that like which parents have taken vaccine, which teenagers have taken vaccine and which have not. So it's all mixing up, and especially if it's a small pool and so many of them, then we're not having any separation or social distancing.
So I want to ask you, you are based in Springfield, and Sangamon County has seen its cases declining into the single digits or low teens for most of the past week or so. I wonder at this point, if a parent has a child at home, they spike a fever, maybe runny nose, they're not vaccinated. Are you still advising to get that COVID test every time?
Yes, please. Because there's no way to differentiate whether child has parainfluenza virus or adenovirus or COVID infection. And many times both infections can coexist. So that's why, and many of the children with COVID may just have, even though we know some can be asymptomatic, but those who are symptomatic, they may just have mild cold-like symptoms, runny nose or cough, or low-grade fever and dry cough. So we have to test for all.
Dr. Chaudhary, I think there's this idea out there that children, they're going to have a mild illness if they get COVID, not a big deal. There was an article I read recently in the Washington Post about a vaccinated couple that flew their family to Hawaii, and their son, who was younger than 11, died of COVID-19 shortly after arriving in Hawaii from another state. Can you talk about how risky is it? How concerned should parents be about whether their children actually catch COVID-19?
As you said, children many times don't get serious disease. Many of them, like numbers vary depending upon the study, but anywhere from 5 to 20% of children may get asymptomatic infection. They may not have any symptoms at all, but others will get mild symptoms like cold, running nose, low-grade fever, little irritation of the throat, and some will get fever and dry cough, but about 6% will get significant disease, and they can develop pneumonia, not only just pneumonia, that they are breathing fast, they can end up requiring supplemental oxygen, and some of them end up on the respirator too. So we have seen patients, more so as teenagers who have come with and that they were diagnosed with COVID. Initially, they watched at home, and then they progressed, respiratory symptoms progressed, and their oxygen saturation had dropped. So we had to admit them, give them antiviral remdesivir, and give steroids so that they could recover, and it took several days. And then another problem we see is what we call multi-system inflammatory syndrome, which typically happens anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks mm-hmm. after COVID illness. And those children can be very sick.
Yeah. So we're going to continue. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We need to take a break here on the program. We're going to continue our conversation. Listeners, we do want to hear from you about kids, COVID-19, what questions you might have. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. More to come. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st comes from Christie Clinic. Christie Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christie Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about kids and COVID-19 and the vaccine in particular, which, as you know, is still not available for children younger than 12 right now. It's approved for the Pfizer vaccine is approved for children 12 and older. I think we're expecting the Moderna vaccine to also be approved for that age range soon. Don't quote me on that, but I know the data has been coming out. And as best as I've heard, it could be September if things continue and the vaccines are found to be safe and effective for children younger than 12 to actually get the shot. We're talking about this with two people who work with children quite a bit professionally. Dr. Subhash Chaudhary is chief of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine in Springfield, and Gloria E. Barrera is president of the Illinois Association of School Nurses. Listeners, we'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. And Gloria Barrera, I want to ask you, what are you hearing from for children, adolescents who are eligible for the vaccine? What are you hearing from them about why they are or maybe they are not getting vaccinated?
What I'm hearing is just the questions that I think the communities have. Is it safe? And just what are the side effects for that second dose that some people are reporting. So I do want to just highlight that IASN is leading a science first public health campaign just by calling on Illinois school nurses to share their COVID-19 vaccine photos and videos. And we're just showing how safe and important it is to get vaccinated. And this campaign has also covered topics like masking, testing, and it will address the vaccine hesitancy. And we're designing the messages with diversity and inclusion in mind to maximize the reach and effectiveness. To ensure equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines, we must consider the social determinants of health that have increased the prevalence of COVID-19 within the BIPOC communities. And the national vaccination effort is one of the greatest operational challenges that America has ever faced. And this is with an already existing underfunded public health program, you know, across the country. And but what I think what the COVID-19 vaccines do provide us with is that hope, right? It's that opportunity to put an end to this pandemic that has resulted in death, economic hardship, just loss of educational progress, and the mental health challenges. I think that's a piece that we're going to start hearing more and more about, is just that mental health component. Because what I saw this school year was that, you know, whole teams were being quarantined and students missing prom, for example, students missing their graduation due to being quarantined. And it has taken a mental health toll on our students. And we can't ignore that.
Yeah, and we got a text message from Joe in Urbana about this, who said he has no concerns about traveling, for example. He said, my 14-year-old has his first shot and will get his second when we get home. We're taking a trip now that he's partially vaccinated and can't wait till he's fully vaccinated. Gloria, what do you say? How do you make that specifically? Let's say you have a teenager in your office at the school. Like, how do you encourage them that this is what they need to do? I mean, I can't imagine you're pulling out journal articles and showing them, you know, the research. Maybe you are.
No, I do give out the handout that we have from IDPH. But I just talk to them about their concerns, just addressing them on an individual basis. And I think that those opportunities will come, I think, more in the fall when there's more of a more students in person, because there has been more of a hybrid model throughout this past year.
Okay, let's go to the phones now. 800-222-9455 is the number. Emily is on the line from Champaign. Emily, thank you for calling in.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
Well, I wanted to really pin down the timeline for when the researchers think that vaccines will be available for children that are under 12, because I have a 17-year-old and I have a 9-year-old, and they haven't seen their grandparents in 2 years because their grandparents live in Europe. And it's difficult. A child changes a heck of a lot in 2 years. We've done some little Zoom things so that the grandparents can see their grandchildren. But my husband really wants to go back and visit his parents, and I feel extremely uncomfortable about bringing my 9-year-old onto a plane, even though he may be less likely to have severe symptoms if he catches COVID. I don't think that's an absolute, and my son has some underlying issues. He has allergies. They are respiratory in nature, so I'm very concerned about traveling with the 9-year-old. Was really hoping that we would get some definitive information on the research that they're doing on children that are younger than 12 and the vaccine.
All right, Emily, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Chaudhary, I wonder if you have any more specific information about a timeline for vaccines for those younger children.
No, at this stage, we don't know how soon it will be, whether by September we'll have for younger children, but it may be down to 9 or 11 at this stage. At least I'm not aware of data which will tell us how soon we'll have the vaccine for younger children.
We also got a tweet from a listener, Carolyn, who asks about CDC guidelines for kids going to summer camp, sleepaway camp in particular. Do they mask in dorms while sleeping in a room with other people? I guess a lot of these camps, you have a cabin, maybe multiple children from different households are in there together. I don't know if you know specifically, Dr. Chaudhary, about the CDC guidelines on summer camp, or if you just have general advice on that question.
Just the general advice. I don't know exactly, but I would think that if before going to the camp, if they get tests done and camp leaders are vaccinated, then I would think that if they are seeing each other, then they should be okay, because they are spending the time together and they were all tested before going for the camp, that nobody is carrying the virus, then they should be safe.
Dr. Chaudhary, before the break, we were talking about possible effects of COVID-19 in younger people. You mentioned that some children do end up getting in the hospital. Some do end up in critical situations where they're on respirators or ventilators. I wonder if you know of any children who have died in Illinois from COVID-19.
We have not seen death due to COVID-19 here, but I don't know the numbers in Illinois.
Sure.
But we have seen a fair number of teenagers being admitted with acute COVID requiring supplemental oxygen. And then anytime their oxygen saturation drops and they require supplemental oxygen, or they, if they were on baseline, supplemental oxygen and requirement goes up, then we admit them, give them steroids and antiviral remdesivir and supportive therapy. We've had a fair number of children, mostly teenagers, with that. And the late complication, like I was talking about, multisystem inflammatory syndrome, we've had a fair number of children with that, that one can see anywhere from very young child to up to the age of 21 years. And that's a, that comes mostly 4 to 8 weeks after the acute infection. Sometimes we have seen even younger children during acute infection with this multisystem disease that they have. They have fever, they have sometimes gastrointestinal involvement, like a lot of vomiting, diarrhea. Others will have irritability, severe headaches, and then other systems like heart can be involved. Blood vessels of the heart can be dilated, or the heart muscle not working well. They can have low blood pressure. They can have low white count. The blood system can be affected. Kidneys can be affected. That's why it's called multi-system inflammatory syndrome, that if a child has fever and has either epidemiologic history that they had contact with COVID, or that they had had documented COVID before, and now they have two or more system involved, and that kind of patient most of the time requires admission to hospital, and many times they are in intensive care unit because they are quite sick.
And do you hear about what about other, so MISC is one possible sort of, what is the term, sequelae, long, what about this long COVID though, this idea you hear about people who experience brain fog, you know, maybe they lose their sense of taste and smell for months and months. Are you hearing about that? Does that something that the children are experiencing as well? Are you treating patients for that?
I have not had any child complain of it, but child's parents, one child I had who was like 20 months old, came with this multisystem inflammatory syndrome. And patient's mother told me that she had had these symptoms lasting for 3 months already.
I want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about children and COVID-19 and the vaccines, which are still not approved for children younger than 12. Adolescents have been approved for one of the vaccines. We're speaking about this with Subhash Chaudhary. He's a physician, chief of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine. Also, Gloria Barrera, who is the president of the Illinois Association of School Nurses. And Gloria, I wonder, a lot of more schools are going to be returning to in-person classes this fall. Where are you? Where is your organization on this move?
I fully support, the schools reopening when it's safe again for students, staff, and the communities to do so, of course, following the guidelines in place. I think what's important to note is that when students are returning, there will be that mental health component that we have to address, but also that we're making it very clear not to send students to school that are sick or that are even exhibiting any kind of symptoms. I know that the exclusion guidelines have removed, two symptoms, but just if there are any symptoms, any kind of sick symptoms, don't send your child to school. I can't tell you how many times I've had students and staff come to school in the past with a non-communicable disease in an effort to try to, you know, push through it. We don't want anyone in school with symptoms trying to push through it. As a society, I think there's a shift now in taking sick days, not just for your personal well-being, but for the well-being of your fellow, you know, colleagues, and also for your children. It's a responsibility that we each have now to combat COVID-19.
What happens, Gloria, at a school if there is a positive COVID test? You mentioned exclusions, but let's say something, you know, that's where if a child has a fever or some other symptom, they shouldn't come to school. But what happens if there is a positive test? What are the guidelines? Is it a classroom, a part of a classroom, a sports team, the entire lunchroom period of kids? How do schools handle positive tests?
Yeah, I think before when there wasn't any guidance on like the distance, it was full classrooms, it was full teams. But now that there are guidelines on the distance, we look at their close contacts. There's a lot of contact tracing that goes on, and that's with the exclusion guidance set forth by the Illinois Department of Public Health. So what that looks like is seeing where that child has been, you know, the past 2 days when the symptoms started. So if they were in school, were they testing? Who were those students around them? Were there any interactions with staff members? And also then on the bus, did they ride the same bus both those days? So there's a lot of effort that goes in from the school nursing perspective. And then afterwards, we have to call all those students, contact those families and let them know that they're quarantined. And again, following the guidance by IDPH, letting them know that, unfortunately, you cannot test out of quarantine. I think that was the biggest pushback that we got from parents and guardians, because, you know, I get it. It's hard to understand that you cannot test out of quarantine. They said, well, I already got a negative PCR. Let me back in school, or let my child come back into, you know, for graduation practice. But unfortunately, that's not what the guidelines tell us. There is a strict policy on exclusion for being quarantined and a set time frame.
Just about a minute left in our conversation. Dr. Choudhary, I wonder, what questions do you still have about COVID-19 and young people, children especially? What are still the big questions in about a minute?
Again, the children can get disease, and most of the time they have mild disease, but they can get serious disease too. So one has to be vigilant, and if there are symptoms, to seek help and get tested.
Dr. Subhash Choudhary is chief of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Diseases at the SIU School of Medicine in Springfield. We've also been speaking with Gloria E. Barrera, who is the president of the Illinois Association of School Nurses. I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with us, Dr. Choudhary and Gloria Barrera, today on the 21st. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Listeners, coming up, we are going to do something a little different for the rest of our program. We're going to go on location to an interview I recorded about a new art exhibit at the Illinois State Museum. It's called Noir. The aim of the exhibit is to celebrate Black lives through art. We're going to go visit the State Museum coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.